This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
To get a little information on the Tribe and baseball as we head into the second half, we turn to super gigantic, awesome, amazing friend of the show. He is Brian Anderson, currently color analyst for the Tampa Bay Rays, but we all know him as a Clevelander, and that's all that really matters. On the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. B.A., what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well in sunny Baltimore, getting ready for this second half to start. Hey, Andy, do you realize if the season had ended over the All-Star break that the Rays and the Indians would be playing each other in the wild card game?
I did, and I realized if they would have got one more game, you'd be coming home rather than the Indians going to the Rays, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, it's funny how that's worked out. You know, the Indians, you wondered – you know, for a time there in the first half, whether they were going to be sellers or not. You know, was Trevor Bauer going to become available and some of their other, good players that they have. But, boy, they finished on a nice finishing kick. I think they won 21 out of their last 29 games.
Yep.
Have cut that deficit in half against the Twins. So it'll be a real interesting second half for, you know, both you guys and the Rays.
Brian, you mentioned the Indians have gone from what it appears from sellers to buyers. From the outside looking in, what do you think the Indians need to buy at the deadline?
Wow, it's interesting. You know, you wonder the health of the starting rotation, if they're going to be able to stay healthy. You know, I'm not really sure. You know, I haven't dug into the Indians very deep, but I know that a lot of these teams, and I think the Indians obviously would be one of them, you know, looking for bullpen help. Looking for teams that are selling, you know, back into the bullpen guys that just don't fit in with the rebuild. Maybe they're making a little bit too much money and they can offload, those types of players on teams that are looking to, you know, to finish strong and obviously be very strong once you get into the playoffs, because you know how important bullpens are. But I think that, you know, just like with the Rays, they're looking all over the place. I know the Rays are, you know, looking at starting pitching. They're looking at bullpen help. They're looking for an impact bat. And I think that's how most of these front offices work now, where they are looking for value. And all of a sudden, they'll surprise you because a bat will become available. They go out and get that. Maybe you didn't think they were even looking for another stick for the lineup, but you never know. But I definitely think that, you know, both the Indians and the Rays and a lot of other teams are looking at bullpen help for sure, first and foremost.
Hey, B.A., I don't know if you know, we had Carlos Pena on during the All-Star break, came in.
Oh, yeah.
And he was saying, this was amazing to me, he was like, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to go to Wright State was because of guys like Brian Anderson. He looked at you like you were an idol. And I was like, wow, I can't believe young Brian Anderson has a guy that played in the bigs who's now 41 years old that had somebody that was looking up to him. And I was fascinated by the fact that Wright State was able to land both of you guys.
Well, first of all, there are a couple things here. First, you've taken some years off my life, and I appreciate that.
No problem. I just want you to be closer in age to me, my friend.
Yes. Yes. You're going to have to add a few on there to get to what I'm actually, how old I actually am. But, you know, it was interesting because when I was getting recruited out of, Geneva, I was not an overpowering guy, whether that be with stuff or size. So most of the teams that I was being recruited by were your mid-level teams, your MAC-level teams. And it's funny because I ended up choosing Wright State because the head coach down there, Ron Nischwitz, was a left-hander who had played in the big leagues. Because when I came down to my final two teams, it was Wright State or Kent State. And that was when Danny Hall was at Kent State, and he was starting to turn that program into a power that it is now. And so, interestingly enough, if Ron Nischwitz would have been a right-hander, I would have gone to Kent State.
Really?
But if he would have been a righty, I absolutely would have gone to Kent State. And what's so funny and ironic at the end of the day were two of the 3 years that I was at Wright State, Kent State led all of Division I college baseball in team ERA. And my junior year, I think I went, it was either 10-1 or 11-1 my junior year, and my only loss was to Kent State. We went to Kent to play a doubleheader. And so I was starting game one, and Travis Miller, a lefty who pitched briefly in the big leagues with the Twins.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, he started against me. And I gave up a leadoff triple to Mike Guilfoyle, who was from Euclid. And then they hit a ground ball to second base, I think, and he scored. And that was it. That was it. I gave up one run on that triple in the first inning. I think I gave up another hit later in the game. So I ended up giving up two hits, the one run. Travis Miller threw a no-hitter against us, and I got beat 1-0.
Wow.
Like that. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, I know.
That really is crazy.
And it's funny, too, because that was the first game of a doubleheader. So I went to our head coach. I went to Nischwitz after the game, and I said, you know, I'm starting game two because I didn't throw that many pitches. And, you know, in college,
you told him you were going to start game two?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I said, I'm getting a win today. And we all know that I didn't get a win in game one, so I will win game two. And so I'm going to go down and start warming up. And I hadn't thrown that many pitches because it was just a seven-inning game.
Right.
So I went down there and started warming up. And, of course, all the scouts that were in attendance went bonkers. And about halfway through my warm-ups, Nischwitz came down and basically pulled me off the mound and said, you are not starting game two. So
yeah, I could just imagine you having that same conversation with Grover. Hey, Grover, I got to tell you, I didn't get a win in game one against the A's today, so I'm going to start game two. What do you think of that?
Yeah, he would have taken a fungo bat and kneecapped me. That's what he would have done. That's a fact.
Oh, that's awesome.
Brian Anderson, join us. Hey, you know, Brian, you have one of the young stars down there in Tampa right now, and I'm curious that, you know, baseball seems to have a problem with the young players. We saw them all on display during All-Star Week. How does baseball get their young players to shine the way they really need to? You know, the NBA does it, the NFL does it, but you don't see it in baseball. We got to see a little smidge of it here during All-Star break, but from your perspective as a former player, how can baseball really promote and get those young stars out in front?
I really think that the only way that you can do it is through events like the All-Star Game, events like the World Baseball Classic, and especially the postseason. That's about the only way you're going to be able to do it, because unfortunately, baseball is an everyday game and it's regional. And that's why people, you know, in the Midwest and the East Coast, they don't know Mike Trout like they should. I mean, this could go down as one, you know, the best player in the history of the game, or our top three, top five player in the history of the game. And most people on the East Coast, yeah, they know he's a good player, but they don't see him. They don't see him. The games start at 10 o'clock East Coast time. And you know, so you have all of those barriers that you have to leap. And that's the problem with baseball, is that it's a regional sport. You know, the NFL, you've got your primetime game, you've got your 1 o'clock games, your 4 o'clock games, and your Sunday night games, Thursday night games. Everything's national. You can watch any game at any time. They're all you know, at the same time. And so you're able to, you know, to see all of these guys, you know, week in and week out. Same thing, you know, with the NBA. The NBA, they market their guys. They put them, you know, in the primetime games. And that's, you know, you become familiar with them, and you start to follow and everything else. But baseball, just, it's unfortunate, because we kind of joke in this game that you go to the West Coast, you disappear. You know, for the longest time, Evan Longoria was the face of the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, he was the guy for almost a decade. All of a sudden, he gets traded to San Francisco, and you forget that he's even in the league. It's hard to follow him. You don't see him. You don't come across him. He's in the other league, and he's on the West Coast.
And he's not playing the Yankees. Right?
Yeah, and that's the problem with baseball. And I think they did a really good job, and I think Cleveland represented itself very, very well, you know, for the All-Star Game. Everything that I've heard from people that were there said that the city knocked it out of the park, and the events were outstanding. And, Daryl, what you were speaking to with the young players, I think that everybody around the country got a chance to see these guys, to start to get to know them, and it's going to have to be events like that drive it, because – you know, baseball and all these different markets on all of these different channels, that's very regionalized. It's just tough to market guys nationally. It just is, and it always will be.
Yeah, I mean, Brian, I didn't know a lot about Austin Meadows until the over All-Star Weekend. And my thing is to your point, so maybe the national networks should do maybe a little less Yankees, Red Sox, and maybe include some other teams in their programming?
It's kind of hard to walk away from that, though, because you got the ratings.
I get it.
If
but
I was a network exec, I don't know that I'd be walking away from Yankees, Red Sox. Sorry.
Well, and you know what? And you're right about that, and that's the problem because it's all ratings driven. You would have to get that in the next national television contract. You'd have to get it in there that you want some of these other teams. But again, you negotiate that contract, and I don't know. I don't know how you do it. I really don't. I mean, I know that a lot of people around the game wonder the same thing about getting some of these teams out there nationally. But like you said, Andy, they go for the ratings, and they're going to go for those big market teams. And it's just tough. It's tough because it's a regional sport, and we have kicked this around time and time again. And you know the national games don't do very well overall. It is interesting when you're exposed to some of these players and you go, wow, this guy is outstanding. And I didn't know anything about him. It's kind of sad that the sport's like that. And I'm sure they're doing everything they can to try to figure out ways to mitigate that and make it better. But it's very difficult in this sport.
I think the biggest thing we learned about the Indians in the first half of the season as we head to the second, and they're on a 10-game homestand that they start off with the Twins tonight, is the whole patience of the game. And I think as fans, we sit here, BA, and we're just like, oh, my God, it's over in April or it's over in May when you're 10 games back. Can you give me a player's perspective on that, on how you can stay? Like Tito seems to be great about, and if he's got one quality that he's amazing at, it's never letting you get two games ahead. And, you know, as you sit here and you look at it, what's it like for a player when you're sitting there and you're you know, Francisco Lindor and you're 11.5 back and now all of a sudden – you're picking up momentum at the All-Star break. What's the mentality you have to have as a player?
You have to understand that it's a grind. It's a grind over 6 months. You're going to go through patches where you play really, really well, and you're able to put together a nice stretch, and you're going to go through other times where you wonder if you're going to win another game. You understand that that's part of the process. You never accept that, but you understand that's part of it. So you have to do a really good job, and I think it's even harder for the players nowadays because of social media and because how interwoven they are with their fans. But you've got to block out noise and just realize I got to come to the field every day and do my job that day. If that means I'm a starting pitcher that day, then go do my job. If it's a day that I'm throwing a bullpen and working out in the weight room, do my job. And same thing with the position players and everybody else. And that's just the way that you have to handle it. And you understand, I think, if you're Francisco Lindor, you look around the room and you say, you know, we are not this poor of a team. There's too much talent in here for this to continue. And we're going to, if we all go focus on our job and do it to the best of our abilities, it's going to turn around. And I think that's exactly what they saw happen there going into the All-Star break. And I'll tell you something, for the Rays and for the Indians, this trip out of the break, or not trip, but these series out of the break are huge because you've got Cleveland starts out at home. You know, the fans are all in a frenzy from the All-Star game and Bieber winning the MVP. You're starting out at home against the Minnesota Twins, the team that's directly in front of you in the standings. So you can handle your business against the Twins and then have to avoid the letdown because here comes the Tigers, here comes the Royals. And those are the teams that you have to beat up on. We're in the same the same place here in the American League East as far as the Toronto Blue Jays and the Baltimore Orioles. And that's obviously who we're opening up against, the Orioles. And so you have to beat those weaker teams in your division that are really not competitive. And so the Indians, that's a huge homestand. 10 games, you got the Twins, you can chip away, make up some ground, and then tattoo the Tigers, tattoo the Royals, and who knows what it looks like at the end of those 10 games. They could be right there knocking on the door of the Twins. Who knows?
All right, BA, last question for you as we head into the second half here. I once had an argument. Actually, I think we were on the road. It wasn't with you, and it wasn't so much of an argument. It was just this great bar conversation, and I just started thinking about it while we were sitting here. Psychologically, when you look at all the major sports, what is the toughest sport? My argument was baseball. And it was the simple fact that you just have so much dead time that you're constantly thinking. And it comes back to the chess part of the game where You know, like, and we saw it with Lindor during the All-Star game, which I thought was awesome, Brian, where, you know, you're checking with the third baseman to say, hey, if it's short, you're coming in over here, I'm over here. You're playing out 100 scenarios in that 15 to 20 seconds of dead time in between pitches. Psychologically, where do you think baseball ranks as far as difficulty in sport?
You know what? Of course, I'm going to be biased, but I would say, you know, I would lean towards baseball because of what you're talking about and because there are so many games and it's every single day. You play 162 games in 180 days. And so take out the 4 days for the All-Star break. It's 176 days. You're getting a couple days off a month. Other than that, you're expected to perform at a level that equates you to the best in the world. And it's nonstop. And I'm going to tell you something. It's a sport where you better have some thick skin and you better learn how to deal with failure because there's a lot of failure in baseball. You're a good hitter. You fail 70% of the time and you've got to deal with that. And you've got to deal with your, you know, 1-for-21 slumps. And you don't get a whole lot of time to kind of sit there and recalibrate because you got to play the next day. And so it's a mental and physical grind for, you know, these guys head out around, you know, beginning of February to spring training. And so when you factor that in, you're talking about almost 8 months. Forget about the postseason. Postseason makes it even longer. But you're talking almost 8 months of day in and day out mental, physical grind against the best players in the world. So I would have a tendency to lean that way. Of course, I'm sure you could find a basketball player and a football player that would tell you that their sport is a lot tougher in that manner. But it's just – it's people don't realize you know, then you factor in the travel – on top of that, and you know, you're getting in all different hours and playing that next day. I mean, it takes a toll. You've got to be smart and you've got to take care of yourself, or you just you'll burn out in August.
BA, last question: Indians Rays. You think we see it in the playoffs?
I think we will. I think we will. I know that this Tampa Bay Ray team, they're going to make some moves, and they will be in the postseason for sure. And I think the Indians are trending in that direction. Now, here's the thing. Do they meet in the wild card game, or do the Indians catch the Twins and maybe they get them in that second round?
Catch them, Brian? Do you think they can catch the Twins?
I think they can. What are they, 5.5? The last month, they've gone from, what, 11 and a half back to 5.5. And like I said, this homestand, huge for the Tribe because they come right out against the Twins three straight. So you know, you win 2 out of 3, let's say. Now you've got it down to 4.5. And then you play the Tigers for 4, and you've got the Royals for 3. You've got to take care of business against those teams. I'll tell you this right here. The difference a season ago between the Boston Red Sox winning the division and the Yankees being the wild card were the records of the two teams against the Blue Jays and the Orioles. In those games, 38 games, because you play each team 19 times, the Red Sox were 31-7. And the Yankees were about 7 games worse than that. Mm. And Boston won the division by, I think, 6 or 7 games. And so that was the difference, was handling the teams, especially in your division, that you're supposed to handle. So you go out against the Twins, you do your work against them, you cut that deficit down a game or two, and then you turn around and you've smoked the Tigers and you smoke the Royals. I mean, they could be just a couple games back at the end of this homestand if they play it right. So I absolutely think they can catch him.
All right, BA, thank you. I'm trying to lobby enough money to get you a statue in Geneva, just so you know that. And hopefully it'll be up by the next time we talk to you.
It could be wooden, even. It doesn't even have to be a real statue. Just carved wood.
Goodbye, Brian. We'll talk to you throughout the season. Thanks, man.
All right, see you, fellas.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.